This is your Polycast for Thursday, October 20th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a closer look at trade as a campaign issue and teachers struggle with the election. The final presidential debate is history. The big headline this morning is Donald Trump refusing to say whether he will accept the results of the election. A lot of issues came up in the debate last night, including trade. In fact, it's been a big issue throughout the campaign. Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and Donald Trump have all blamed trade deals for low wages and the loss of American jobs. So why has the U.S. agreed to so many trade deals? And why are many politicians, including President Obama, still pursuing them? In the latest of our series of reports on issues in the presidential race, Mark Zdechlik has the story.
People like to trade. It's a great way to get what you want. Just ask a kid.
I traded some of my icebreakers for a bracelet, pony homecoming bracelets.
That's 9-year-old Isabel Weber sitting at a table in the Lake Elmo Elementary School library. Smiling broadly, Isabel says she trades a lot.
It's fun. You don't have to have the same thing all the time. You can switch up.
Kids are trading Pokemon cards at a nearby table.
Did you want to trade, Alex?
Because of politics, many adults are also talking about trade now, maybe more than they have in a long time. Alarm about unfair trade was a big part of the 1992 presidential election. Ross Perot mounted a third-party challenge to Republican President George Bush and his Democratic challenger Bill Clinton. Perot repeatedly slammed the proposed North American Free Trade Agreement known as NAFTA. Both Bush and Clinton supported the deal. Here's a clip from a debate then.
If you're paying $12, $13, $14 an hour for factory workers, and you can move your factory south of the border, pay a dollar an hour for labor, have no health care, have no environmental controls, no pollution controls, and no retirement, and you don't care about anything but making money, there will be a giant sucking sound going south.
Bill Clinton won the election and signed NAFTA into law at the end of his first year in the White House. Now, 23 years later, NAFTA is back in presidential debate.
Secretary of State, and I have
your husband signed NAFTA, which was one of the worst things that ever happened
well,
to the manufacturing industry.
Trump accuses U.S. negotiators of incompetence. He says he'd renegotiate trade deals to keep America from getting ripped off and strictly enforce deals. More now from Trump going after the North American Free Trade Agreement on the debate stage with Hillary Clinton.
NAFTA is the worst trade deal maybe ever signed anywhere, but certainly ever signed in this country. And now you want to approve Trans-Pacific Partnership.
The proposed Trans-Pacific Partnership is designed to lower trading barriers between North American countries and several across the Pacific, including Japan, Vietnam, Australia, and New Zealand. Clinton once said the TPP, as it's known, set the gold standard in trade agreements. She now says she opposes the deal. Clinton says she supports global trade, provided it does not harm American workers. Clinton is proposing a special trade prosecutor to enforce agreements. Critics say TPP would cost American jobs. Supporters, including President Obama, say it would help U.S. small businesses, manufacturers, and farmers. A Gallup poll published earlier this year found 1 in 3 Americans view foreign trade as a threat. A Bloomberg poll released last spring found nearly 2 out of 3 Americans want more restrictions on imports. Republicans have generally supported trade deals. Democrats have been a bit more reluctant. But even so, this year has been unusual, with so many candidates coming out against trade pacts. It may be because big industrial states that have struggled to regain jobs lost in the recession are so important in the presidential race.
We haven't had this kind of very serious, high-profile discussion of trade for quite a long time, though.
That's University of Minnesota economics professor Robert Kuderle. He says blaming trade for economic problems is an easy campaign trail sell.
Populism has never seen trade as other than with suspicion, whether it's on the left or on the right, because it's based on a very curious proposition.
That proposition is called comparative advantage. Kuderle says it's difficult for many people to understand that even if one country's better at doing everything than another, both can benefit from trading with each other.
Even if we can make clothing much more efficiently, than it can be made elsewhere in the world. We might still benefit from importing clothing and having our workers go into areas in which we have an even greater advantage over the rest of the world than in the clothing industry.
The problem, Kuderle says, is that although a country benefits overall from trade, trade often hurts pockets of workers in specific industries.
One of the big sad stories of the last 10 or 15 years has been what's happened in, say, the Mid-Atlantic, the Mid-South, and in certain other parts of the country, too, to textiles, apparel, and the furniture industry. They've just been completely wiped out, mainly from China, and with a devastating effect on local communities. And that's something which clearly, in retrospect, we should have done more about, but we didn't.
In Minnesota, you don't have to look hard to find trade winners.
So remember, corn is the tall ones, beans are the short ones, cows are the tall ones, pigs are the short ones.
On his farm, southeast of Mankato, Kevin Papp explains that much of the corn he's growing will be sold far away from the U.S.
Here's one row, two rows, that third row there, we know, is going overseas.
Papp is the president of the Minnesota Farm Bureau. He says NAFTA quadrupled markets for Minnesota farmers. He welcomes more trade agreements, too, provided they're carefully negotiated and their terms are enforced.
We have to have trade in agriculture, whether it was NAFTA, whether it's a Trans-Pacific Partnership. We've got to be able to trade with the rest of the world. 95% of our customers don't live here in the United States. They want our products, and we want to get it to them.
As for anti-trade campaign talk on both sides, Papp predicts cooler heads will prevail when the election is finally over. They had better, says Robert Kuderle from the U of M. He says the focus should be on helping Americans who get hurt in trade deals, not punishing other countries that want to sell things here. Kuderle says tariffs of the sort Donald Trump has proposed would trigger trade wars, which he says would hurt many more Americans that are hurting now under trade deals.
It could be disastrous. It's true that agriculture and processed foods are at the top of Minnesota exports. They would be damaged. But all of our sophisticated manufacturers, all of our software, all of our high tech, all of that would be put in jeopardy.
Due to our trading fake cards.
Back in Lake Elmo at the elementary school, 10-year-old Corbin Carpenter admits that sometimes he and his friends try to trick other kids in trade deals.
We call that ripping people off because they rip them off.
Kuderle from the U of M says countries don't engage in trade to rip off one another, but instead to play to each other's advantages.
We trade because it's mutually beneficial, and it has been shown ever since the early 19th century that both parties gain from trade.
And that's why, despite the campaign rhetoric, more, not fewer, trade deals are likely. Covering politics, I'm Mark Zedeklik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Lake Elmo.
The 2016 presidential campaign is posing a dilemma for teachers. The political landscape is increasingly polarized, and students are hearing about behavior from candidates that would get any seventh grader sent to the principal's office or worse. As Solveig Wasvet reports, it all has teachers walking a fine line.
In classrooms, as on radio, there are some things you just can't say.
Who can, in a school-appropriate way, tell me what happened between the first and second debate? That was a big deal.
Casey Metcalf prompts silence with this question to his usually chatty U.S. Studies class at Sanford Middle School in Minneapolis. The students clearly struggle to find words that qualify as school appropriate for Donald Trump's comments on a recently released Access Hollywood tape. 12-year-old Annabelle speaks up.
Tape came out where Donald Trump was talking about women in a very vulgar and inappropriate way.
Phew. With that hurdle cleared, the class moves on to discuss Trump's response to the tape and counter-accusations about Hillary Clinton's private email server. Metcalf says with the heightened rhetoric this year, keeping class G-rated isn't his only challenge. He also walks a fine line between staying politically neutral and taking on important issues. Like many teachers, he doesn't broadcast his own political beliefs in class.
It's tough because you have to balance the fact that some students are feeling personally attacked by the candidate, feeling like who they are is an issue in a campaign. So you want to be able to defend them. You want to be able to say, you know, I hear you and I see you and I want to be on your side. But at the same time, there are other students who are at a different place, and you want to be able to give them a voice.
Bloomington social studies teacher Stacy Buchanan says she won't answer the question students ask most often. How are you voting?
My hope for my students is for them to have the ability and the skill set to determine their own political beliefs.
But it's difficult, especially given recent allegations of sexual assault against Donald Trump.
How do we stay neutral when it comes to the issues, but then how do we address things that are devastating to hear as a general public and don't condone as a general public?
Buchanan says she sticks to policies. Her ninth graders research a different topic each week and choose the candidate they align with. Then before the election, students make a final choice. For younger students, it may be good to get candidates even farther out of the lesson. Prairie Creek Community Charter School teacher Michelle Martin says the elementary has an ongoing lesson replacing the humans entirely.
We, in 2008, created an alternative system called the United States of Gourd.
That's right, Gourd. The school made two parties, polygourds and freegourds, platforms closely resemble some more familiar political parties. Martin says teachers bought out the garden store to give each student a squash. There's a debate leading up to the election.
We needed to find a way to give the students a safe place to explore politics and the electoral process without it being a challenge to their parents' viewpoints or being something that it would appear that we were taking sides.
Back in Minneapolis, 12-year-old Aniza sits at the center table in Casey Metcalf's class wearing a pink headscarf. Aniza says she's one of the students feeling targeted this election, especially by comments about Muslims from Donald Trump.
It makes me feel mad because he thinks all Muslim people are terrorists, and that's not true.
Aniza says teachers should talk about the election, even when rhetoric gets extreme. Metcalf is on the same page.
I don't think that we can ever say that a political campaign is for mature audiences only, because why are we teaching a social? Why are we teaching government in middle school if we can't talk about it in a real way?
And while some adults might have started tuning out this election, these seventh graders are on the edge of their seats. Covering education, I'm Solveig Wastvedt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.